Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And, of course, this is Tuesday, but yesterday on Monday we had Phillies baseball with the Reds. Proud to be your home for Phillies baseball all season long. And our Monday show is always brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. The Purdy's have served this valley for decades. And don't forget about the Truman H. Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament, Wednesday, May 4th, Susquehanna Valley Country Club. Looking forward to seeing you there, and let's fill up all the foursomes ASAP for a great cause. And this is the 25th year of the Truman H. Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament. Before we get to our guest, our play-by-play call of the day. Pretty obvious. Last night in Houston, my friend Kevin Kugler on the call.
Jenkins will trigger. 4.7 seconds to go. Inbound to Ryan Arcidiacono. At half court with 3 seconds. Ryan Arcidiacono flips to Jenkins. Three for the win. It's good! It's good! Jenkins hits the three to win the national championship for the first time in 31 years. You can call the Cats champions on the Jenkins three at the buzzer. 77-74. Villanova wins it. Jenkins with the dream shot in Houston.
My friend Kevin Kugler has been on this show several times, and the last time I was, Dick Girardi, Kevin and I, and Jeff Tarman, we went out to dinner at Michigan State, as a matter of fact. Just an outstanding announcer. And Kevin's moving on, by the way, to Augusta National. He's got the Masters coming up this week on radio. And as you can tell, Villanova did win the game. Ed Siegel, teammate of Jay Wright's. Ed, welcome. It is great to have you with us.
Great to be here, Steve.
I know there have been certain guys in my career where I've walked up to them when they were playing. And I'll give you an example. Dan Earle, who's now the head coach at VMI. I remember saying to him when he was maybe a sophomore or junior, I said, someday I'm going to be talking about you as a head coach, because you can see it in him. When you played on the same team with Jay Wright, did you see he had that mind to have to potentially be a coach?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was much different than, I guess, going back. Coach Flannery was a graduate assistant for 2 years while Jay and I were both at Bucknell. Jay was a year ahead of me. And Pat loved basketball, but Jay was just a born leader. And people were just drawn to him, whether it was the fraternity or basketball or just meeting people in the university center, everybody wanted to be around Jay, and Jay just had this ability to make you feel good about yourself. So, you know, you think about the Rick Pitinos of the world, and I always said, Jay is as dynamic or more dynamic than Coach Pitino, and over time that's going to realize itself. And obviously last night, what a prepared coach, and what a great performance by his Villanova team.
Exactly, and it was a great performance because he put together all of this himself along the way. And Pat Chambers was a part of it. Here at Penn State, he was a part of it. He had some great teams. 9 was a great team that made it. 6 was a great team that didn't make it to the Final Four. And many thought maybe 6 was his best team yet. What is it about him that, in his ability to relate to other people, that allows him to be an effective recruiter and communicator?
Well, as I said earlier, the confidence he gives players, put his arm around Ryan, during the game. Chris Jenkins, I thought, took a couple of bad shots. And instead of getting down on Chris, he had that relationship with him. You got to take some bad with the great, the good and the great from Chris Jenkins. And, you know, he didn't get on him. And I think the tendency for coaches to overreact to a, you know, to a single opportunity or one defensive stance or, you know, somebody misses two or three shots, and he didn't. And, you know, when players have confidence and, you know, they play for each other, you know, it's unlimited in what you can do as far as performance. And, you know, to get all those players to buy into, you know, what he wants to do, to move the ball, to get the ball inside and play from inside out, those are the things that, you know, make you a championship team.
Yeah, I mean, no question. The first time I ran into Jay Wright was when he was the head coach at Hofstra. They played Penn State in the ECAC Holiday Festival back in December of 2000. And I was really struck with how organized he is. How organized was he when you were around him at Bucknell?
Well, you know, Jay was loving life, as most college students
good for you.
Yeah, you know, the thing about Jay was actually a very good player. And he had one good year at Bucknell. And the challenge Jay had at Bucknell was that it was just, he was in a class that was following Al Leslie, Bob Barry, Pat Flannery, my older brother Steve. And there wasn't a lot of playing time. And so it was a junior. He was a junior by the time that he really was, you know, going to be asked to produce for Bucknell. And, you know, I think about that. My son's a sophomore at Kenyon College in Ohio, and, you know, and just thinking that, you know, the first time that he gets, you know, good court time would be his junior year, that's very, very hard. So, Jay wasn't a gym rat. He was very dynamic. You know, just everybody wanted to be around him. I remember, you know, he was crafty. He had this one individual move that just would, you know, we dating ourselves, we didn't have a tradition. We didn't have the three-point play, so we had the traditional right. three-point play. And Jay was a very good outside shooter, particularly from the corners. So he had the ability to take the shot, grab the defender's jersey, pull the defender down on him to get to the foul line and get a traditional three-point play. So, you know, he's crafty like that, and just a really a fun guy to play. Last night, you know, looking at Facebook, there's a, you know, bunch of, you know, photos from some of his classmates that were there, and he's been great. Whenever Bucknell played Villanova, he had the whole Bucknell crowd there and treats everybody just, you know, starting the conversation where we left off, whether it was 5 years ago, you know, the summer. You know, this very open, very uplifting type of guy. And, you know, so what I saw when I was at Bucknell was, boy, this guy could sell ice cubes to an Eskimo. So, you know, whether it's coaching or whatever trade where, you know, you want to sell something, you know, and just so happens that, you know, he really built a very good relationship with Coach Flannery when he was a student. And I didn't, he, you know, he was a year ahead of me, but he, you know, Pat was there and he was mature. And so those guys, you know, when Pat was a graduate assistant, they hung out and, you know, they just would talk basketball. And then throughout the years, that relationship has been very, very close, you know, cause there's lots of ups and downs in the college basketball, coaching business.
There's no question about that. What about the ability that when you have talked to him years later, has he seemed like the same guy to you?
Yeah, I mean, he has this, he interacts with his high school buddies, his college buddies, you know, the people that go down to the shore, you know, the same way. And, you know, I was just really impressed, you know, because, you know, you think about it, you know, when we were younger, you're thinking about, you know, Roy Williams was a guy that we used to turn on the television and watch. And you know, now, you know, Jay's his counterpart, and he acted, you know, very much the part. Just, you know, his confidence over the years, you know, my sense was that he was significantly more focused on this Final Four than he was the previous Final Four. And he's a smart guy. He learned.
Right. Well, that's exactly right. Because you do. Let me give you a small item, and I've talked to Pat Chambers about it because he was a part of that Final Four in 2009. Even a small thing such as warming up. When you warm up and the court is in the center of the floor, normally you're done about, you know, at what, 11, 12 minutes before tip-off, you go back in the locker room, then you come back out with about three or four, okay?
Right.
Well, you can't do that at the Final Four because the locker room is so far away. Now you have to figure out there's a holding area. That's a small item that actually becomes a big item that if you've been there before, you treat it differently. And you could tell Jay treated it differently from the press conferences all the way through because he learned the first time through.
Yeah. Yeah, you just did a great job. I think Bridges came on during the season and just, you know, some games, a couple of the NCAA games, I thought he was like the second best player out there on the floor. And there's a guy that, you know, hadn't played much before the, you know, the season started. And then Chris Jenkins is, you know, I'm sure that he tests you from time to time. But the confidence that he had on that last shot is because of, you know, who he is as an individual. But he was nurtured by a pretty darn good coach.
Did you get nervous watching it last night?
No, I didn't. You know, I get nervous watching my kid.
Of course you do. In fact, do you notice the other kids?
you just feel, you know, you just feel your heart pumping, and you just feel great. You know, it not only was it great that you know, Jay Wright won, and he's a Bucknell guy, and Times was pretty instrumental in my life, and instrumental and close friends with a lot of my other friends, was just that it was just a tremendous game. And what, you know, and those kids are Ryan and Daniel are, you know, 4-year seniors. It was a tremendous game. And North Carolina, you know, fought like the Dickens. And, you know, they have, you know, Coach Williams has done a great job there because you turn on the television from time to time and say, are these guys really interested in playing basketball? And during the last months of the season, they were locked in, so it just made for a great game. Both those teams really wanted the prize, and one possession was the difference.
Ed, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Great perspective. I think everyone enjoyed hearing what you thought about all of it, and what Jay's done, because obviously, hey, forever, no matter what happens in his life, he is a national champion.
Yeah, just a wonderful guy, a great institution, and you know, those kids, they put it out there, so they deserve it, and very, very, very happy, and just a great guy. So, you know, it just he and Coach Flannery really got the best of their student athletes, and they really cared tremendously for those individuals, and I think that's, you know, part of why they were, you know, why they have had so much success.
Ed, thanks so much. Appreciate your time very, very much.
Thanks, Steve. All the best.
All the best to you. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. Great to have you with us. 1-800-795-9565 is the number. Love to hear from you. Jump right in. Talk with us. And we'll get your perspective. Always appreciated. Villanova won it last night. It was not a good game. It was a great game. And that's because both teams played at a high level. It's what it's what you hope a big game is, regardless of the sport. 1-800-795-9565. We'd love to hear from you, get your perspective, or maybe you have a question or another comment on something. We'd love to hear it. Phillies yesterday beaten by the Reds 6-2, although Freddie Galvis did hit a two-run homer yesterday for the Phils. And it's great to have them back on News Radio 1070 WKOK. It's fun yesterday. You get in the car, you flip the flip, you know, you're saying, well, you can get, yes, I can get WKOK on my car radio here in State College. Okay, who do we have here, Sean?
We've got our great friend Dick from Milton calling in.
Hey, Dick, how are you today? It's great to hear from you.
Hey, Steve. Hey, two things on Villanova. The game with Oklahoma, maybe the best game anybody will ever see in college basketball, for at least from one team standpoint.
I agree with you. That was unbelievable how good they were.
I mean, they shot from the field better than most teams shoot from the foul line. And but I actually called you about Jay Wright. I wanted to tell you for me, it's always been a kind of a cute story, and I've told this to a lot of people. Of course, I work over there. I'm at the desk, and it's a Friday night, and Villanova comes into town to play Bucknell. And I'm sitting there, and in the door comes Jay Wright with his assistant coaches. I didn't know at the time that's who they were, but the Bucknell coach. And up the stairs they went. And they're upstairs at the old Davis gym like about 10 or 15 minutes. And they come down the stairs, and they leave. And I said to the coach, aren't they going to go over to the basketball arena? He goes, no, they'll see that tomorrow. He just wanted to show his coaches where he played basketball, which I thought was kind of a cute story, because he wanted to show him Davis Gym.
Now that's coming from your roots right there, Dick.
Well, I saw Pat Flannery and Jay Wright play just literally every home game that they played at Bucknell. Which is to my advantage, I guess, in a sense, because you got to see a lot of good basketball. But that's my Jay Wright story. I always thought it was a cute one. I've told that to a lot of people. He wasn't that interested in seeing the new arena. He said, I'll see that tomorrow. That's what he said. I'm going to just show Davis Gym.
Hey, that's where he cut his teeth. That was his gym. That's what, you know, that's what's cool about it.
Well, obviously, Davis Gym was Bucknell basketball to him.
Yeah, exactly. And what did you like? Did you like Davis, or do you like Soika better?
Well, I actually like basketball in Davis only because, like Rec Hall, it's really a home court advantage. It just was. I mean, you could check the records. They won a lot of basketball games in Davis Gymnasium. And they won their share in Soika, but I just like Davis personally only because of the unique smallness of the gymnasium, and of course when you compare it with where they played last night, which was almost you needed binoculars probably to see the people in the front row. I don't even think you see the court with binoculars.
It's really, I understand that people want to go. I got that. They had over 70,000 people last night. And to both teams' credit, they shot the ball really well in there. I mean, but it still is a different kind of experience. It's almost like you change the rules of the game a little bit because of how cavernous the place is. But it's a long way from Davis Gym to the house that Bill O'Brien rents.
Exactly right. And by the way, I appreciate your interview with Ed Siegel. Very, very nice gentleman. Good, decent basketball player. Comes from a real basketball family. His brother was a Bucknell basketball player, obviously, and real nice guy. You know, he's got a nice perspective on basketball in general, only because he played it for such a long time and pretty well at that case. And not everybody's big time center.
Oh, I know. I think it's terrific. You know, to get him on, and that's actually Sean's the one that did that. He set the whole thing up. I set up Matt Leon, and he set up Ed, and we just thought we'd try to give a well-rounded perspective, and we appreciate the fact that you liked him.
I've known Ed a long time also, and he's very, very knowledgeable of basketball. He really knows his stuff. He's, you know, And he's got a unique perspective because he played basketball in college basketball. Not everybody, most people are just fans. That's all they'll ever be. Not everybody's a player, at least at that level.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly. And you could tell he had that little, you know, he could tell what Jay was trying to do, why he was trying to do, why he was trying to recruit a certain way, how he wanted to play out a certain situation. And you and I both know the play that they ran with Archie Adakina last night. I wonder how many times they practiced that play in practice with options off of it, but they probably have practiced that probably 10, 15 times a week.
I'm sure that they all practice it. Not everybody has the 4 seconds left to make the play. See ya.
Yeah. Hey, thanks, Dick. See ya. All right. Oh, what a great night it was. Villanova won it. North Carolina, it's heartbreaking.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us. Time now for our sports bozo of the day. Always multiple choice here on this. I don't know about you, Sean. I didn't like how last night's game was officiated.
A couple questionable calls. Could have been I counted at least one travel late in the game. A couple minutes to go.
At least.
Yeah.
I thought there were several moments where I thought there was traveling last night.
I forget the player that got called with a foul. It was a Carolina. It may have been Meeks. And it looked like it was a clear jump ball and a possession change.
Yeah. And I just, I just didn't like the way it was called last night. I don't know. It's not as if I haven't seen those guys before. Obviously, you know, when it comes to Terry Weimer and John Higgins and Michael Stevens, I've seen all those guys before. They're all, you know, in their own right, very, very good. It's just, I know they were trying not to get involved in the game, but at the same time, I didn't quite get what they were doing last night. I was kind of taken aback by that.
And kind of take a look at the overall scope of the tournament. It seems like a lot of referee crews, they want to make sure they get it right. And do you think there may be one too many times they go to the video monitor just to, you know?
You know what? I didn't get the video monitor feeling. I did not last in the tournament. I really didn't. I thought that for the most part, that was not an issue in terms of the video monitor didn't bother me the entire tournament. And I thought that was fine.
So what were your overall thoughts of the year with used to be 5 timeouts per team per game and knocking that down to 4?
Actually, I wanted to mention the rules for a moment. I thought the rules were a slam dunk this year. I thought the rules were a slam dunk. I thought that you go to the 30-second rule and everything else that goes, you know, the 30-second shot clock. There are a lot of people saying, well, that's not going to work. That's not going to do this. That's not going to do that. You're going to get bad shots. You didn't get bad shots, to be honest with you. You didn't. And I thought as time went, the flow of the game was really, really good. I thought the 30-second shot clock was exactly what the game needed. I thought they called a lot of fouls early in the season, but I thought that was justified. I mean, I definitely thought it was justified that they would call a lot of fouls early on. And the because I thought the flow of the game would be a lot better once they went to that. I saw fewer video reviews this year, which was really good. I thought that that the only thing I would add to replay, the only thing I would add to replay is I think you should be allowed to replay goaltending when it if it hits the backboard or not. Not in terms of what the arc of the ball is. You can't do that. That's a judgment call. You can't do that. But I think you should be able to add goaltending off the glass. And I only saw one instance all season, but I'm saying that's one that should be added to the replay list. The number of, you talk about timeouts. Coaches don't like losing timeouts, but it was better for the game, and it made the game quicker. Didn't take long for us to get used to the inside of 30 seconds, it then becomes the media timeout. Didn't take long to get used to that. The one thing you had to get used to quickly was that the first timeout of the second half, regardless of when it's called, is a long timeout, and that it does not change the media timeouts. So, you know, you had to get used to that. But other than that, the flow of the game was just much better. Scoring was up. Flow was better. Games were more exciting. Games had more points. The rules, you know, let's take, for example, Penn State. First of all, I think it worked well for Nathan Davis's team. Nathan Davis's team likes to play up-tempo. They like to be 73, 74 possessions a game. They like to move, keep it going. They want to run. The rules were perfect for the flow that Nathan Davis wanted to play with this year. For Patrick Chambers, he had to micromanage with this team a lot. But Patrick Chambers, the team he has coming in starting next year, a whole new ball game. They are going to play very much an up-tempo game where the shot clock is not going to be as much of a factor in games. So I think that what they did with the new rules was a slam dunk for the game across the board. I liked all of them when they were announced anyway. There was no rule that was put in last year where when I sat back and talked about it here on the show, I didn't sit back and say, eh, you know what, I'm not so sure about that, you know. But that's, you know, the key for these guys, they want to get these games into 2-hour windows. Okay, everything's done for TV. Why'd the game tip off at 9:19 last night? TV. Everything's done for television now. It doesn't, you know, the viewing public, you don't really count that much. The paying public to the games, you don't count that much. The radio audience, you don't count that much. It's, you know, if TV tells you you're tipping off at 9:19, you're tipping off at 9:19. Now, I realize that also means you're tipping off at 6:19 in the Pacific time zone. I understand that. But these games are supposed to fit into 2-hour windows. That's something, for example, I've had hockey fans here complain that I can't believe we're playing on a Thursday night. Okay. You know, don't they realize hockey is a college hockey is a Friday, Saturday sport? I said, yeah, I know it is traditionally. But I said, it's TV. I've had wrestling fans complain about, well, why are they starting the dual meet at this time? Remember, what was it, the Ohio State dual meet? What was it, 6 o'clock it started at?
Yeah, Friday night at 6. Yeah.
Right. Now, is that a great time to get 15,000 people into the Jordan Center traffic-wise? No. And remember, Dick was trying to drive in, and Dick struggled getting in.
A lot of my Facebook friends that are huge Penn State wrestling fans that had tickets, yeah, they said it was a night. Well, I would call it a nightmare. It was just much more of a challenge compared to a Sunday afternoon dual meet at Rec Hall, for sure.
Right. Now, why are they doing that? It's all television. Television is the reason why. I don't think Penn State consciously sat there and said, you know, I think 6 o'clock on a Friday night would be great for traffic. I mean, they know darn well if they wrestle at 7 or 7:30, they would have been in much better shape. You know, people came from far and wide to see that dual meet. But that's the difference between football, men's basketball, and any other sport right now. In football and men's basketball, we're used to it. We're used to being a television show. And that's what we are. In the end, we're a television show. That's why football kicks off at noon. Football kicks off at 3:30, 4, 4:30, 6, 8. That's why men's basketball tips off at noon, 2:15, 4:30, 6:30, 8, 9, 6:30 and 8:30, 6 and 8, 7 and 9. And plays all 7 days in the week. Penn State this year literally played each one of the 7 days in a week this year. Each one. Because that's where television tells you you have to go. They pay the big money. They run it. Now, sports that aren't as used to being on television, fans are having trouble adjusting. Well, they don't understand. Ice hockey is a Friday, Saturday traditional sport. Well, not if TV tells you. If they tell you you're playing Thursday and they're dropping a puck at 6:30, you better show up at 6:30 on Thursday because that's when they're playing. Because TV told you that's when you're going to go. And wrestling, you know, the first 125 is on a Friday night at 6 o'clock. You want to see 120? You want to see Nico Megalutis go at 125 at 6 o'clock? You better be there at 5:45. I didn't say that was right or wrong. I'm just telling you what the reality is. And I think for those who love other sports, women's volleyball. Women's volleyball is a Friday, Saturday sport. But the Big Ten Network has a Wednesday time slot for the Wednesday game of the week. Different. Completely different. Excuse me. I was going to talk about the Masters. Jim Herman won the Shell Houston Open. As I mentioned earlier, Jim Herman, 37-year-old, I don't like using the word journeyman, but it's the best word I can come up with for the time being, so I apologize, you know, in advance. It makes it seem like he's less than he is. I've told this story maybe 15, 20 times on the show, but I'll just tell it again. My brother got tickets to the Greater Hartford Open 1 year. And I was back home at the time in Connecticut. And he said, hey, I've got tickets. Let's go. And it was a Saturday. I said, let's go. And I said, okay, I'll go with you. Sure. So we're just roaming around the course, picking up whomever we can get at particular times. You know, there's Davis Love III. There's David Duwell, you know. And we're walking down the 10th, which is a dog leg to the right. Not a complete one. It's a slight dog leg to the right. And Tommy Armour III hits a ball down the right side, and it goes into a bush. Now, I don't mean it's on the ground under the bush. It is in the bush. It's about 12 to 18 inches off the ground in the bush. So he gets there. He looks at it, and he and his caddy look at each other. And they just roll their eyes. And, all right, Armour walks out in the fairway, takes a look, talks to the caddy about yardage, goes back out, takes a look. They talk a little bit about club selection. He finally takes out a 6-iron. And out of the bush, he hits the ball out across the fairway, and he slices it. He's right-handed. He slices it, hits in front, rolls up on the green 20 feet from the hole. He then walked up to the hole, knocked it in for a birdie. If you can play on this tour, like any, if you can play any sport at a professional level, you're really, really good. Now, you may not be the best in your sport, but to get there, you've got to be really, really good. I relate that story because Jim Herman, just to be out there on a professional tour, is really, really good. Is he Tiger Woods? No. There are different levels of from really, really good to great or awesome. But Jim Herman won the Shell Houston Open a week ago. He was not going to, he had no thoughts. He wasn't going to Augusta National and qualified. He probably had enough clothes to get through Sunday, hoping he'd make the cut so he could get to Sunday. Well, he gets to Sunday and he won. He had to knock down two pars on 17 and 18, and he was rock solid. Good for him. And Steve Sands is talking to him on NBC afterward. And He's in tears. A 37-year-old fighting his way on the tour was able to qualify for the Masters. So he's at Augusta National this week. And now has a 2-year exemption on the tour. It meant so much to him. Now, Alan Shipmunk wrote the cover story on Sports Illustrated about Tiger Woods, and a lot of it was sad. You know, he jumped back and forth, going back to like 1981, and he jumped forward to 2009, and he jumped back to 1995 or 6, you know, and he jumped ahead to 2004. You know, it was one of those back and forth, where he'd take you back in time and then take you to present time. Or to another time in his career. And a lot of it dealt with, you know, how obsessed he was with winning, how intimidating he was, how he was so locked in, incredibly creative, golf was his life, the whole thing, the influence of the father, the indiscretions of the father, which then became his indiscretions. You know, and they went through, you know, a lot of information in there. It was not a short article. But there was one piece in there that really struck me above all. It was after he'd been married for a short period of time to Elin Norgren. And he won a tournament. And I don't know if it was a major or if it was like the Buick or the Green Bar or something. I don't know. He won the tournament. And she said, and she used to be the nanny for Jesper Parnevik. She said, "Oh, this is great. We're gonna go home. I'm gonna set up a party." He says, "You're gonna do what? You're gonna set up a party?" He says, "Every time Jesper won, we always had a party." He said, "No." He says, "We're supposed to win. No party." I found that to be sad at the same time, because I've always said that winning is really hard. And to have the mindset that you're supposed to win, while an admirable, confident quality, what about appreciating winning? And you wonder if through all this he appreciated winning, and it made me wonder if the grind of this whole thing, you know, here comes a major, here we go, right? Makes you wonder if along the way, besides his body breaking down and, you know, he's calling it to respond in a certain way and he can't right now, if maybe he, this whole grind of life and golf burned him out. I don't really like talking about that, but, you know, when I heard the part about the party, like, you know, you can't, winning's hard. And I realize you're the guy with the target on you all the time. Everybody's chasing you, and you're the intimidating factor. But I found that to be sad. In other words, you're doing this, which, let's face it, I mean, how many people would like to have changed, you know, on a golf course? On a golf course, how many of you would have liked to have, for a day, played like Tiger Woods? For a day. All right, come on, Sean. Even deep down.
Sign me up. Even one day? Okay. We'll take one day.
Okay, for one day, we'll let you be Ronaldo. How about that? All right? But, and would appreciate being Tiger Woods on the golf course for a day. And he was Tiger Woods on the golf course every day. And I read that, and it just seemed like he just didn't enjoy it. Wow. And then Jim Herman wins the Shell Houston Open. He qualifies for the Masters, gets a 2-year exemption, and he cries because it meant so much to him. And he's won one Shell Houston Open. He doesn't have 14 majors. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Even when they grow up, your kids can still surprise you. My son calls to tell me he bought his first new car. picked the mate, model, and dealer all by himself, and negotiated his own deal. But when it came to insuring his new ride, he wanted Dad's advice. I told him one word, Selective. They've always done right by me. It's nice to know you're still needed.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Pretty Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at prettyinsurance.com. Find out what Pretty Insurance can do for you.
Great to have you with us on this Tuesday. Fun show today. Thanks to Ed Siegel for coming on the show today. Former Bucknell teammate of Jay Wright, and also to Matt Leon from KYW in Philadelphia. Tomorrow, Tony Knopp, the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management. We're going to take a look at the business side of sports. But Kevin always hated that because it just took away all the aura. He didn't realize there was a monetary exchange on these things.
He's already got that. Tomorrow afternoon, he'll be in his office, door shut. Looks like he'll be busy, but we know what he'll be doing. He'll be locked into this show.
First of all, when I both those what he does every day anyway. There's really nothing going on there to begin with. You and I both know that. Come on, man. All right. That'll be fun tomorrow. We're looking forward to that very much. So. So that's all coming up on tomorrow's get-together. Tony Knopp.
And also thanks to everybody that commented about our special George Curry tribute last Friday. If you want to listen to that, just go to our podcast page if you want to play that back, or you get a chance to hear it again at stevejonesshow.com.
Thanks a lot for all the great comments. We appreciate it. All right, we will talk to you tomorrow. Tony Knopp with us.